This half hour being brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, terrific service department, inspections, routine, difficult to handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. And I say that not just as somebody because we're so grateful the fact they're a sponsor, but guess what? I'm a customer at Sunbury Motors. All right. With that, we bring in one of the best in the business, the play-by-play voice of West Virginia football and basketball, Tony Caridi. My friend, welcome. Great to have you back.
Hi, Steve. How are you, buddy?
Doing great. Long time no talk. What is it, Friday?
Yeah, we got you on this past week to get your insight to what's going on as we get ready to do this thing, huh? Ready to go again.
Yeah, so let's talk about the general atmosphere surrounding this game as a lead-up. Pitt, obviously, the backyard brawl is very special. Is there anything in the Big 12 that approaches, in the fans' minds, anything of a backyard brawl or a Penn State being there?
No, not really, Steve. I'm just trying to think out loud. Nothing really has taken, and it's a good question. I think sometimes in order to develop a rivalry, as weird as this sounds, like something out of character has to happen, i.e. A bad call, or hey, this team was given a fifth down and you lost the game, or a fight, or something weird, right? Yeah. And I think that's what builds those kinds of situations, and certainly the backyard brawl for West Virginia and Pitt have had a litany of those types of things which increase the intensity of it. So I think that this game, its uniqueness is that the last time Penn State was here was 92, which is a long time ago, obviously. And I think that since the two teams played so many times, 60 meetings over the course of the many years, that, you know, it's a game that builds excitement. Then you just throw in the mere fact that it's a season opener and everyone is, amped up for a season opener, and West Virginia's coming off a 9-1 season. So I think that kind of paints the picture to where we're going this week.
Garrett Green is a player that plays with a lot of guts. He's very talented, but he's also got a lot of guts. Where has he improved in your eyes?
I think it's a good question. I think when we went up there last year, Steve, really the first true road start for him, and to go into that atmosphere, you know, there's a lot going on, obviously, and I think where he has improved is being judicious with the ball. If you take a look, he only threw 4 interceptions in all of last season. He's really a statistical anomaly if you take a look at it. He had higher success throwing the deep ball than he did the short range and the mid-range pass a year ago, and really throws a beautiful deep ball. And so I think going into this season, he's much more confident in the short pass game, the intermediate passing game. And then to add to that, I think he just feels really good about what he can do using his legs. He's a top-end speed guy and can get out of the pocket. He can extend drives. That's really something that WVU did not have in Neil Brown's first 4 seasons. We did not have a quarterback that could make plays with his legs, and that is problematic in today's football. And so he gives them that ability to make a play when a play isn't there. And I think that he'll go into this season feeling better about his arm and knowing that when he needs to go, he can go and make a play.
The running game, the number of times in the offseason that Jack Ham and I have talked about C.J. Donaldson is more than I think you'd realize. So the Donaldson component, but then add in what Jaheim White did in the last half of last season that gave West Virginia a different dynamic.
So that's a great point. Because a year ago, Jaheim was not ready to play in this game. They just didn't trust him enough. And as a result of that, he didn't get a single carry. And so it was on C.J. Donaldson. So real quick story, just for Penn State fans that don't follow, obviously, on a week-to-week basis as far as what goes on here. So Donaldson converts from a tight end to a running back as a true freshman and has a really, really big-time season. Mm-hmm. And so everyone had high expectations for him last year. And he had a shoulder which nagged him the entire season. It could have been operated on in the summer of his freshman year, but he'd already broken his leg, so he didn't want to have two surgeries. So he nurses that thing. So he was okay, but by his own admittance, it was a disappointing year for him. Here comes Jaheim White, you know, about four games into the season, and he explodes, and he starts doing the things where the coaches can trust him to play. And he ended the season just really super red hot. So that gives you, going into this year now, a really unique combination. You've got a small built running back in Jaheim White who has the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, and he's got speed to break away from people. And then you add in a healthy C.J. Donaldson, who did have that shoulder repaired at the end of last season. He didn't play in our bowl game, and he's good to go. So I'm interested, you know, what difference does a Jaheim White make in this game on Saturday, and then what does a healthy C.J. Donaldson look like?
Defensively, there's the team does have multiple transfers, and it seems like there are a group of them on defense. How interested are you, Tony, to see how they mesh together on defense, especially the transfers in the secondary?
Super interested. I think that's a whole component of the whole season, to be quite honest with you, Steve. We've got a Big Ten transfer in Garnett Hollis, who was a corner at Northwestern, and he'll start at one spot. Yep. We have another corner who's going to start by the name of Aiden Garnes, who we played against yet last year when he was at Duquesne. And, in fact, he had a pick in our game against Duquesne, which made West Virginia coaches kind of raise an eyebrow. But he became a heavily sought-after corner when he put his name into the portal. And he's interesting. And so they feel, and this is kind of wild, neither of those two have started yet at WVU, but Neil has said that he's better at corner now than he was a year ago. But it's also a concern. Same situation at safety. You've got some new bodies out there, and you're hoping that they mesh. You know, you go back this past weekend and take a look at Florida State and Georgia Tech, and Florida State had a bunch of really super talented players, but they weren't gelled yet because they came in from different places. And as a result of that, you know, sometimes the continuity and the consistency can beat the talent. And I think overall, West Virginia, especially offensively, returns intact. There's a couple sprinkles of salt that they've added in transfers. But defensively, D-line, solid, good, returning guys, linebackers, guys who have taken a lot of snaps. But that back half of that defense, those safeties and the corners, if you're a Mountaineer fan, you've got to hope, but you don't know exactly what it's going to look like right now.
Yeah, it's not as if, I mean, Penn State's faced Jaheim Joseph before. They faced Hollis before. Conversely, let's get into this interesting dynamic. If there's any offensive coordinator you're going to go up against that knows West Virginia, it's going to be Andy Koltunicki. Conversely, if there's any team that you're going to play in the opener that knows Andy Koltunicki, it's West Virginia because of the Big 12. What are your thoughts on that dynamic?
Add another layer to that one. Yeah. Go back to Koltunicki at Buffalo.
Yeah, no, he talked to
Neil
me about
Brown
this.
Faced him when he was at Troy in a bowl game. And Neil, during his press conference this afternoon, said, I called my agents when we had played those guys. And he said, hey, you need to take a look at this guy at Buffalo because he runs really good stuff. Yep. And you know, Steve, in coaching circles, whether it's football or basketball, when you say, hey, that guy runs really good stuff, like that's the ultimate tip of the cap of respect from one coach to another. So they're familiar with him. I mean, they've broken down. In fact, Neil today during his press conference talked about how Koltunicki has had past quarterbacks that body-wise and arm strength-wise were similar to Drew Aller. Yeah. And so they've gone all the way back, and they're looking at that. And that's part of the deal. And that's one of the areas that, you know, everyone, I think, is interested. Penn State fans are interested to see what their new coordinators change and do this season. And then, obviously, West Virginia is also, you know, intimately wondering out loud what their presence will do, you know, in Saturday's game.
Neil Brown, you brought up his name. A year ago, coming into the Penn State game, some people were wondering if West Virginia didn't have the season they had hoped for, that it would be trouble. They ended up going 9-4, and the Houston game had to be crushing for you to call the end of that. I'm still in shock over that one. Neil Brown survives all of this. What has allowed Neil Brown to be a survivor?
Well, several things. I think, one, he's truly a good person, and I think that everyone around him that deals with him realize that. Two, I think the roster that he inherited from the previous staff was as low on talent as I've ever seen, and I've been here. This will be my 41st season, and each coach, from Don Nealon to Rich Rodriguez to Bill Stewart to Dana Holgorsen, each inherited a minimum of 8 players on the roster that they inherited that went on to play in the NFL. Neil Brown inherited 1, and we just were out of players. The talent wasn't there. Throw in COVID, throw in the genesis of the transfer portal and NIL, and it took longer than anticipated and expected to get into this new world. And I think for the very first time in his 6 seasons now, that you go in to every single Saturday this season and you will be a competitive football team. You've refilled the cupboard with the personnel that you need, that every Saturday you'll compete. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate to every Saturday you're going to win, but we've been playing with one arm behind our back here for about the last 4.5 seasons. It really wasn't until the second part of last year where we got back to where we needed to be. And so I think those are the reasons why, if you were just looking at it, not without your heart, but just looking at it, you know, as to what this dude is about and what he was able to do, you say, keep him going. So I was absolutely thrilled the season that they had, because as you indicated, if it didn't go well, if that thing was about 6 wins last year, he probably isn't here.
Right. For you, Penn State fans haven't been to Mountaineer Field since 1992. You get the best seat in the house every week. To you, what makes that place special?
I think there is an inherent passion for this team that is different than in most places. And I say that in this regard. Firstly, we're a really small state, 1.8 million people. And there are 55 counties in West Virginia. And every county, in some way, shape, or form, has a commitment to WVU. Whether they went to school here, their family went to school here, whatever it might be. The fact that there are no professional teams in this state makes this the professional team. And so the ebbs and the flows, the highs and the lows, truly are felt by the entire state in our sports, in football and basketball, and really in all sports. And so that's what makes it different. So when those people come in, when Mountaineer Nation comes in to the stadium, like they're, we mean, the cliche is, you know, you're the 12th man, you're the 12th person.
Yeah.
Like they truly do believe, like, I got to do something here. I got to make a difference in this game. And I think that when that scenario is put in front of them, they do their part. And I think it'll be on full display on Saturday. You know, the perfect world would have been, we play this thing at 7:30, and then, you know, it would have been even more electric under darkness. But I don't think there's any question that this thing, even though it's a noon start, it will be extremely intense and extremely emotional, really, from pregame warmups. And so I think it's a classic, you know, kind of what you hope for in college football.
You know, and going back to being around West Virginia myself in the 80s, It was always a thought process, not in football, but this was more of a basketball thing. Can't be in the Atlantic 10. We got to be in the Metro. Can't, you know? Or if we're not in the Atlantic 10, I mean, you know what I'm doing. I'm not speaking out of turn here. I mean, I think my quotes are pretty close, as you know. Now the landing spot was the Big 12. Probably maybe the ideal landing spot's the ACC, but that's another discussion. What have the fans thought of the Big 12 as a football-basketball landing spot? And with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, what do they think about the future of it?
I'll answer the second part first. The future of it's really strong because they went out there and they just built their numbers to 16. And yeah. So it's hard to blow up a 16-team league. And I think that you were fragile, obviously, if it would have been, you know, if you're at 10 or 12 and you lose 3 or 4, then you're in a difficult situation. So from that regard, they feel comfortable that they're in a position of, okay, we're strong. The other aspect of it is, and I've said this so many times when I talk to Mountaineer fans across the state, the only bad thing about this league, the only bad thing, is the geography.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only bad thing.
Yeah.
As far as being in a conference with similar institutions that have similar missions, a lot of state land-grant institutions are in the Big 12 Conference. That's who we are. And so geographically, while you might not think, you know, West Virginia and Kansas State have similarities, like, their fans are our fans. Oklahoma State's fans, Iowa State's fans, Texas Tech fans. You can put them all together. It's the same deal. But unfortunately, up until Cincinnati and UCF came in last year, you just can't get to the games like you used to be able to. And our fans love to go to the Pitt game, love to go to the Penn State game, love to go to Rutgers, love to go to Syracuse, love to go to you know, it was easy. That's the way that it should be.
Right.
And that's an entirely different story and show that we could do one day, Steve, about how that Eastern League, you know, what would have happened if Pitt and Penn State could have come to an accord. And, you know, and who knows nowadays in this world, but it would have been great to see had we gone off and done that thing. But regardless, it is what it is. And I think that while there isn't any great history or tradition, this will be year 13 for us in this conference. It's a good league and it's good quality competition.
Yeah, I could do that show with you because I actually did a series of interviews with Joe in 1981 about attempting to form that. And then the subsequent interview about the disappointment on his part, it didn't happen. So I could do that show if you wanted with some information behind it.
Let me ask you this. Did he finger Pitt?
It was starting with more Syracuse.
Really?
With Jay Crothamel.
Yep.
And Boston College. And I'm trying to remember Boston College's AD at the time. Jay Crothamel was the AD at Syracuse.
Oh, yeah.
And they were the ones that talked to Pitt about, hey, why don't you just join us in the Big East? And then the Big East, Dave Gavitt met with Joe at Bradley International Airport in Winter Wax, Connecticut, to talk about maybe Penn State getting into the Big East for basketball. And the no votes ended up being St. John's, Villanova, Seton Hall, and Georgetown.
Stunning, right?
Yeah, you know, Providence was the only basketball-only school that voted yes. But they couldn't have more than three no votes. And they got four. And that's what kept them out. And so, that means there's a long story behind it. But he thought he had it. He thought he had Maryland in it. He thought he had the Fiesta Bowl lined up as an automatic bid. There are a lot of things that he had put a lot of work in trying to check each box as he went along. He thought he had it. But it was like, it wasn't so much him talking about Pitt. He was more angry that Syracuse and BC worked on Pitt to go to the Big East and open the door there than it was Pitt just bagging it. He was more in the Syracuse direction than BC. So.
And isn't that ironic that they ultimately, those two schools are the ones that blew up the Big East because they took off to go to the ACC?
Right, exactly. And then we're going to see what's going to happen with UConn basketball because it doesn't sound like it's a football move.
That's ridiculous. I'm praying that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I know. I understand. And look, if you're going to join a conference, you join it for the whole thing. Okay?
Yeah.
And the reason that UConn's not in the ACC is Boston College.
Sure. Yeah.
Can't wait to see you Saturday. We'll talk off the air for a little bit about a couple things. And we'll go from there. Because I think I saw a request that, can we talk?
Yeah, all I yearn is the back to the old days. Can I get a depth chart? It's just a guy looking for a depth chart.
We'll do that. Tony, thanks so much. I'll see you Saturday. We'll talk here shortly.
Thanks, buddy. Take care, Steve.
You bet. Tony Caridi, the great play-by-play voice of West Virginia football, basketball, and great to have you with us on the show today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.